The following program is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences, the Arkansas Symphony, and UALR Public Radio.
This is Jeffrey Robson, and you are listening to At the Symphony. During this hour, we will preview and explore the music of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra's Masterworks series. I will play some of my favorite recordings of the works being performed and share some thoughts and tidbits about the music and its composers. The program of works discussed today will be performed this weekend at the Robinson Center Music Hall in downtown Little Rock. The 1920s were a period of artistic flowering across Europe and the Americas. Artists of all types, as well as the general population, emerged from the ashes of World War I, searching for meaning in the new 20th century modern life. The horrors of war and the hardships of the post-war period were never far from anyone's mind, even as Europe marched relentlessly towards a new world war less than two decades later. With this search for meaning, however, came incredible bursts of creativity. Paris, while it faced many hardships in the years immediately following the Great War, attracted many émigré artists, and Paris quickly became one of the great cultural centers of the world. Artists such as Picasso and Brancusi, writers such as Hemingway and Joyce, composers like Gershwin and Prokofiev, many others spent time in Paris, some never leaving. Parisians went crazy for American jazz music. African-American performers such as Josephine Baker became huge stars. Many other musicians found a much more settled and accepted life in Europe rather than in the United States. French composers soaked up these influences from abroad. Major international expositions in the 20s contributed to the cosmopolitan culture of Paris. Artists and musicians and writers gathered in cafes and cabarets to share ideas and plan exhibitions and performances. The biggest names in classical music were arguably Igor Stravinsky and Maurice Ravel. Darius Milhaud was part of the next generation of French composers coming of age just before World War I broke out. He was ruled unfit for military service during the war and instead went to Brazil to serve as secretary for the French ambassador to that nation. He returned to France after the war, having heard a great deal of Brazilian popular music, much of which was Brazilian tango, also known as maxixe. In his 1920 work, Le Boeuf sur le Toit, which translates to The Ox on the Roof, he quotes nearly 30 Brazilian songs. Milhaud composes a unifying theme that appears in each and every key during the work. Conceived as musical accompaniment for a silent film, it was transformed into a surreal quasi-ballet by the well-known writer, philosopher, and impresario Jean Cocteau. The pervasive rhythm throughout is that of the habanera, a 19th century Cuban and Afro-Cuban form that's found its way into popular music across the Western Hemisphere. This ballet gave name to a famous café in Paris, Le Boeuf sur le Toit, where Milhaud and his composer friends were frequently seen. Milhaud often has the orchestra playing in two different keys at the same time, which gives this music its occasional surreal quality. Thank you. This is At the Symphony here on KLRE Classical 90.5, and you've been listening to Le Boeuf sur le Toit, or The Ox on the Roof, by Darius Milhaud, performed by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Jean-Pascal Tortelier. You can hear this work in its entirety this weekend when the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra takes the stage to continue its Masterworks series with a concert titled French Connection, this Saturday, October 21st, 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, the 22nd at 3 p.m. Ticket information is available at www.arkansassymphony.org or by calling the box office at 501-666-1761. You're listening to music of the early modern French master Maurice Ravel. By 1920, Ravel was regarded as the elder statesman of French composers. He was thought of as sort of an establishment figure to be rebelled against by the younger generation, which included Millot and his group of composer friends known as Les Six, or the Six. But what made Ravel a great modern composer was the diversity of influences in his music. He looked back not just to French romantics like Fauré, and also, of course, Debussy, but back centuries for inspiration to the early Baroque period, and also around Europe and beyond. He is perhaps best known for his unceasing dedication to beautiful melodies and for orchestral music that is so well orchestrated it can span the full spectrum from minimalist to lush to pointillistic modern sounding in moments. His piano works are known to be phenomenally difficult because they weave virtuosic and delicate sound tapestries that require perfect execution. In the 1920s, he was swept up in Paris's jazz craze, and you can hear this influence clearly in his piano concerto in G. You can hear him experimenting with added note chords, standard in jazz, and of course the blues scale. Written in 1929, nearer to the end of his life, it has all of Ravel's hallmarks: beautiful melodies, the delicacy of Mozart, modern techniques, and a variety of influences. This next excerpt is from the second and third movements of Ravel's Piano Concerto in G, performed by Martha Argerich, the Berlin Philharmonic, and conductor Claudio Abbado. This is Jeffrey Robson, and you're listening to At the Symphony on KLRE Classical 90.5. You've just heard pianist Martha Argerich and the Berlin Philharmonic performing the Piano Concerto in G of Maurice Ravel. This weekend, the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra will perform this piece together with guest artist pianist G, an up-and-coming pianist whose performances have received rave reviews. He's performed recently with major orchestras such as the Toronto Symphony and the Nashville Symphony, and in 2012 was the winner of the Young Concert Artists International Auditions. Well-known in Korea, he was the youngest pianist to win the New York Philharmonic's Young Artist Competition at the age of 10. He's since studied at the Juilliard School in New York. Once again, he'll join the Arkansas Symphony for performances this Saturday, October 21st at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 22nd at 3. On the second half of the program, we will stay in the 1920s, but we'll take a geographical turn that changes the nature of the music drastically. Expressionism was dominant in Germany during the years between the World Wars, having begun a decade or so before World War I. In Expressionist painting and literature, reality is distorted in order to evoke a particular feeling, almost like a filter. Edvard Munch's painting, The Scream, is considered an important early example. In the 1920s, this movement was exemplified in works by painters such as Kandinsky and Kirchner. Much of this work is steeped in angst and turbulent inner struggle. This seemed to suit the culture of post-war Berlin, itself struggling with a mentally and physically devastated population and war-caused poverty. While Berlin was becoming a major cosmopolitan center for sciences and for government, it was also known for a vibrant leftist movement, as well as for a certain jaded view and acceptance of quote-unquote decadent life, including a reputation for criminal activity and a fascination with violence and erotica. In music, German Expressionism was fathered by Arnold Schoenberg, who eschewed traditional notions of beauty in romantic music. He believed a piece of music had to be stripped of formula, which included traditional harmony, and thus developed the avant-garde style of atonal music. This was the musical world that Kurt Weill matured into. The giants of symphonic music were Gustav Mahler and Richard Strauss, and Schoenberg and his followers were the avant-garde. Weill was 20 years old in 1920 when he penned his first symphony, subtitled Berlin. The score indicated inspiration from an expressionist play, a work by Johannes Becher, entitled Workers, Peasants, Soldiers, A People's Awakening to God. This one-movement symphony plays like a spiritual search for meaning as carried out entirely inside one's own mind. Like one's thoughts and dreams, the music is dense, almost too fast moving to track, but with moments of lucidity and calm. The piece opens with something of a musical question. Harmony is based mostly on the interval of a fourth rather than a third in traditional tonal music. The resultant harmony is rich and warm, but with moments of uncomfortable dissonance for sure, much like a thought stream. The music continues in a way that seems to depict competing forces or thoughts. There's much chaos and few answers. The music settles into a more somber tonality and features a solo cello prominently. You can hear traces of the composer Kurt Weill was to become, a renowned composer of song and musical theater. You can also hear the music build to a beautiful romantic climax, much like in a Strauss tone poem, only to have it savagely ripped away by the same angst-filled question of life's meaning. The work continues and appears to reach a jubilant climax of self-discovery, only to have persistent doubts linger at the end. This is a recording of Marin Alsop conducting the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. You are listening to music of Kurt Weill on At the Symphony. You can hear this fascinating early work of his this weekend in its entirety as the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra resumes its Masterworks series this Saturday and Sunday at the Robinson Center in downtown Little Rock. The program will conclude with a delightful gem of a work by Claude Debussy. I often think of Debussy as the first modern composer for his inventive reimagining of the use of harmony and form to depart from the Austro-Germanic mold that had held in Europe since before Mozart's time. Often referred to as an impressionist composer, Debussy was really more influenced by the symbolists, who favored idealist expression over realist expression. These included the poets Stefan Mallarmé and Paul Verlaine, who both inspired works by Debussy. Two of the four short movements in Petite Suite are titled after poems by Verlaine. The third, titled Minuet, evokes early music from the Renaissance in a way that would have been very striking in 1889 when this was first performed. Looking back to old styles was very common later in the 20th century, but Debussy was something of a pioneer. Then the last movement sounds like it could be from a Russian ballet, again showing his mastery of styles and ability to stay out of a traditional mold. Here are the first two movements of Petite Suite, titled En Bateau and Cortège. The orchestra is the orchestra of the Suisse Romande, conducted by Ernst Ansermé.
Thank you.
This is Jeffrey Robson, and you're listening to At the Symphony. That was music of Claude Debussy called Petite Suite, which will close this weekend's Arkansas Symphony Orchestra Masterworks Concerts. The concerts are this Saturday, October 21st at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday the 22nd at 3 p.m. Jeffrey Robson, yours truly, will be on the podium, and we'll feature guest artist pianist G. On the program, works of Darius Milhaud, Maurice Ravel, Kurt Weill, and Claude Debussy. As usual, the concerts will be preceded by concert conversations, a pre-concert talk taking place 1 hour before each performance. Until then, this is Jeffrey Robson with the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, and we'll see you at the Symphony.
You have been listening to At the Symphony with Jeffrey Robson, a presentation of the Arkansas Symphony and UALR Public Radio.